Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. And joining me, as always, is my friend and colleague, Larry Glass, Executive Director of the North Coast Environmental Center. Hey, Larry.
Good morning, Tom and everybody.
And I'm also joined by Matt Simmons, the legal fellow from EPIC. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Tom.
And we are also joined with Chad Swimmer. Chad is the president of the Mendocino Trail Stewards. Chad, welcome to the Eco News Report.
Thanks. Thanks for asking me to be here.
And today we're talking about an issue in Chad's backyard, which is the management of the Jackson Demonstration State Forest. And so this is a piece of public land, but you may not know that it exists if you don't live in Mendocino County. So we're going to introduce you to this interesting little piece of heaven and talk about the issues that are going on the Mendocino coast. So, Chad, how about you give us the 1 minute, who are the Mendocino Trail Stewards?
Well, we started off a bunch of mountain bikers. It's amazing what's happened since really March 1st. There was a meeting of the local mountain biker group, and we looked at this plan of Western Jackson, which Jackson's 48,600 odd acres. And Western Jackson is about 15,000 acres all to the southwest of Highway 20, right surrounding the towns of Fort Bragg, Mendocino, Casper, so a really well-known and pretty touristed area. And on the plan, on the map, there were six timber harvest plans, and it looked like about 80% of our trails were going to be out of commission for a period of time. And from a mountain bike perspective, that's pretty frustrating, especially considering that all of these trails were built with volunteer work by the mountain bike group. But from a conservation perspective, it's a whole different story. We pulled a little subcommittee out of the group and met and decided to call ourselves the Mendocino Trail Stewards, and pretty quickly hooked up with a number of other locals in the area who weren't bikers. So mostly mushroom foragers and walkers, dog walkers, and a couple horse riders, equestrians. And we started trying to figure out how we are going to deal with these plans, because we know that it's very hard to stop a timber harvest plan pretty much anywhere. And this area has had a long history of conflict surrounding Jackson State. Jackson State's a public demonstration forest. And I first moved to the county in 1986 from Southern California. And in the early 90s, I started spending time in Jackson State, and I have ever since. But I didn't actually know what it was, other than the forest that I'd go to right outside my backyard, my back door. And there were lots of big clear cuts, and it was pretty ugly and lots of trash and lots of slash and not a demonstration of anything I wanted. The trail stewards got together, and we first were focused on the idea of creating a no harvest recreation priority zone in the western about 5,000 acres. We had meetings with a lot of people, including Mike Powers, who is the manager at present of Jackson State. And we kind of pulled back for a while, trying to refine our message more and decide how we were going to deal with this, because he seemed very cooperative and he said a lot of things that seemed pretty positive. And then all the fires in the summer happened. And then I was riding my bike and I saw a posting on a tree way out in the forest for a timber harvest plan that Mike hadn't mentioned was going to happen. And it seemed like they just kind of sprung it on us. And they had said that this one timber harvest plan, that which is the Casper 500 plan, which is very close to where I live, which had already been approved, was going to be the only one happening right now or this year. And then this other plan, which is the Mitchell Creek plan, which was being posted on a tree out in the forest, was going to happen at the same time. And I thought, I don't know if I can trust what this guy's saying. I went to a meeting, and our meeting was kind of up in arms about it, the meeting of the trail stewards. And we started networking with people that we hadn't met before. And one of the ways we did this was actually looking at the CalTrees website, which is where timber harvest plans are posted, and looking at who had made public comments. And one of our people actually contacted those people, and we ended up with a really powerful group that's expanding exponentially as we speak. And I'll leave it at that, but there's a lot more to say.
And I have to give a big shout out to the Mendocino Trail Stewards, who have jumped in with both feet into the deep end on timber harvest plan review in such a short period of time and are now writing really, really great comments. So kudos to Chad and to all of the trail stewards along the Mendocino Coast. So,
thank you.
So the Jackson, it is a state demonstration forest, which, again, I think I said at the beginning of the show, if you're not from Mendocino County, you probably have no idea what the heck this thing is. You know, we're all familiar with state parks, right? That's a form of public ownership that makes sense to us. And the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, right? We kind of instinctually get these things. What is the Jackson Demonstration State Forest? What's its history and who owns it and why does it exist?
So this is complicated, and I'll try to reduce it to not a few sentences, but a few paragraphs. That it is a plot of land that's about 48,650 acres, and it was owned by Casper Lumber Company, and it was started in 1861 by a guy named Jacob Green Jackson, who was kind of a timber baron, to say the least. And Casper Lumber Company expanded and basically took down just a majestic, massive ecosystem of 2,000-year-old forest. But when we think of forest, you know, this is one thing we're learning and we're seeing, that we're thinking of trees. And it's really this millions of years old ecosystem that goes from deep in the ground up to old growth topsoil that's on the top of trees and species that never even come to the ground. So they pretty much raised it. And by the 1940s, they decided to sell it because they had some big debts and they weren't able to make much money anymore. And they sold it to the state. So California bought it in 1947 with taxpayer money. And in 1949, it was turned into the first state demonstration forest. And now the entire state forest system is pretty small. It's 70,000 acres, but it's a pretty important chunk of land. There's 9 state forests, and I think 4 of them are demonstration forests. So what a demonstration forest is a forest where they demonstrate logging methods.
And this might have made sense in 1947, right? Where logging was not in its infancy, because we've been doing it since the beginning of time, but this was around a time in logging on the North Coast where we had kind of a revolution in logging style, where we incorporated a lot more machinery, a lot more heavy machinery, and really improved our efficiency in clear cutting.
Yeah.
And that's the real misunderstanding that I had a long time ago. I thought, when I first heard about Jackson State, I thought it was research being done on more of the ecosystem and how it responded to being cut. No, it was just about them coming up with more efficient ways to do logging.
It is about the ecosystem. It's just that the way they're looking at it is not from an ecologist's mindset. I feel there's a total need for a demonstration forest, but not what they're demonstrating. And what they've been demonstrating is silviculture. And so they try to justify the types of silviculture, tree cutting they do, by showing how it's not doing a lot of damage, which is really what you're saying, Larry. You know, I live right next to the Casper watershed, and the Casper watershed is actually home of one of the 2 longest running watershed studies in the country, and the only one that doesn't have snowfall in it. And they say a lot of things about logging that seem like they're pretty rosy, but on the ground, it just doesn't make sense. When you go in and they say, well, 50 years of logging under the California Forest Practices Act shows that there's no siltation in the rivers, and you walk down to the creek and you see siltation and you think something's wrong here. Forestry is a science, and forestry is taught in universities. And for to be a science, they need to have studies. And so the studies that are coming out of Jackson are supporting the forestry industry. But unfortunately, it's an industry. I hate to give science a bad name, especially in this day and age, but it seems like it's a lot of it is industry science. And so it's kind of greenwashing. But even beyond that, the problem that we're seeing is that if you look at the management plan of Jackson, and it's hard to look at, it's 440 pages long, but page 1 says that Jackson is a commercial timberland. What that means is that they need to get money out of it. And the state forest system is part of CAL FIRE, which used to be California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. And this is another story, which I want to tell really quickly, but that Jackson is the source of revenue for the state forest system. So what's more important to the managers is that they make money and not that they create good science. If you look at their actual management plan, they have a lot of really lofty sounding statements. They talk about sustainable ecology and carbon sequestration and climate change management, but none of it is binding language. And so what ends up happening is they just cut a lot of trees. And if you look at the timber harvest plans very closely, you don't see a lot of demonstration plots and demonstration science written into the plans. So if you don't have the demonstration science in the plans, what are they demonstrating? That they can cut trees and make money. The other side of it is who is controlling Jackson is Cal Fire, which used to be CDF. And this part of the history, I've just learned that right after 2001 and the 9/11 attacks, that state parks and state forests around the country were turned into more law enforcement type agencies because they had this idea that people were going to commit terrorist acts out in the state forests. And it gave them a little more clout that all of a sudden they were Cal Fire and not California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. Now we've got Cal Fire that has a huge firefighting division and a division that reviews and approves timber harvest plans and a division that manages the state forest. So essentially, when the state forest writes a timber harvest plan on public property, public lands, they submit it to themselves. And then they, of course, approve it. If they need money, they're going to approve it no matter how shoddy of a plan it is.
Yeah, so it's a pretty awkward system. And it is unique in California, or we have a couple other demonstration state forests, but this is a weird piece of public land, I guess is what it boils down to. So you've mentioned that there are a number of timber harvest plans. This is the standard way that a private forestry company would log their own lands that are currently being pursued by the Jackson Demonstration State Forest. Can you give us a quick rundown of where these THPs are on the Jackson and why you are concerned with these THPs?
So there's one that's been approved, and this was the Casper 500 plan, which anybody familiar with Casper knows it is a community that was pulled together and galvanized more recently because of a campaign against logging in Jackson. Casper was a mill town a long time ago, and in the 30s, they had over 25 bars and brothels. And now it doesn't have basically anything but residents. And it
no
is,
more bars than brothels? What, Chad, why do you even live down there anymore?
Well, you know.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
For a long time, there was the Casper Inn, which was a great bar, but they fell on hard times a long time ago. And you know, with COVID, they're done. Although they do have a little restaurant. But Casper is one of the most accessible pieces of forest in the area. And there are a number of trails right out of Casper. The Casper plan was the way Cal Fire publicizes these plans, because legally they have to, is a little paragraph in the paper. And nobody noticed it. And this was publicized just as America was starting to freak out about COVID at the start of last year. And it was vetted and approved between March and May, which, as we know, we had other things on our mind. There was one public comment submitted that I can find. And this is as soon as people started seeing, you know, locals were walking around with their dogs and picking mushrooms, and they were walking around and finding trees with blue stripes around them. They're like, whoa, wait, they're going to log here again? And a lot of people had thought that they had stopped logging. And a lot of people, longtime residents of Casper, remember that there were some pretty large clear cuts in Upper Casper quite a while back, and then when in the 90s and before. And when Cal Fire got a lot of complaints about it, they started pushing helicopter logging, which was a real public relations disaster for them. But people thought that we were lulled into a state of complacency because Jackson is large enough that most of the logging that had been happening was happening in the eastern portion of it. This Casper 500 plan is approved and ready to go. And we are trying to fight it, but because of the structure of how you can stop a timber harvest plan, it's going to be difficult because you can only comment in a certain period of time, 30 to 40 days after the pre-harvest inspections, which were in March. And then you can only litigate it on it after it's been approved for, I think, 30 days. Is that correct?
Yeah, about 30 days.
And so right now it's approved and ready to go. The one really different thing in Jackson is that Jackson doesn't actually harvest any of their own wood. They write plans and then auction them off to LTOs, to licensed timber operators. And whoever gets it. And then they have to follow certain guidelines set out in the California Environmental Quality Act and the Forest Practices Act. But the problem is if they don't, there is nobody to enforce it. And CAL FIRE has said for a long time that, well, we don't have the resources to enforce this. And if you look at it, it's most of the timber harvest plans in their aftermath, it's really an environmental disaster.
So we have a number of THPs, one that's been approved. There are a couple that are open for public comment. Welcome to the Eco News Report. Today, we're talking about an issue in Chad's backyard, which is the management of the Jackson Demonstration State Forest. I wanted to direct people to your website, Chad, because you've done a great job laying out what's going on with these timber harvest plans. If people want more information on how to comment on these Jackson Demonstration State Forest THPs, where should they go to get to the Mendocino Trail Stewards?
Well, this is go to our website, which is MendocinoTrailStewards.org. And remember, it's O-R-G, not C-O-M. And at the top in the navigation, there is a drop-down menu that says Timber Harvest Comments. And Timber Harvest Comments, we have the current THP status sheet, which I try to update as often as possible. And then there is information on the two that are open to comments. And I'll talk about those really quickly. And then a how to comment page, which gives a lot of information that I got from EPIC. And it also kind of has a glossary of timber harvest acronyms, because some people do actually like to read timber harvest plans, which are long and boring and full of acronyms that you have no idea what they mean, even though they're all kind of, most of them are no-brainers. The timber harvest plan that's kind of been CAL FIRE's most recent Achilles heel is the Mitchell Creek Timber Harvest Plan. Mitchell Creek is at the end of Simpson Lane in Fort Bragg, and Simpson Lane has about 2,000 people living on it, and they floated this timber harvest plan not really realizing that it would cause them so many problems. And it's not a very profitable plan because, I mean, there are a lot of decent old growth or second growth groves in it, and there's a lot of decent trees in it, but it's the way they're proposing to log it, which is called single tree selection, which sounds good, but it has huge problems with it, especially when it's close to houses and lots of residences. But Mitchell Creek is 550 acres, and it was supposed to be closed to public comment, but the comment period got extended. So I think it's going to be two or three more weeks. Look at our website. We've got a lot of information about it and how to comment and email addresses to send it to. The other timber harvest plan that's open right now for comment is the Mendocino Woodlands Little North Fork of the Big River THP. And this is also proving to be really controversial for them because the Mendocino Woodlands is a very unique WPA area demonstration camp.
It's Works Progress Administration. We're talking about the 1930s New Deal, let's give everybody a job sort of a thing, right?
Yeah, and it's beautiful. And it was part of this push to get Americans to travel, to help the economy and to travel within the country and have family campgrounds, family campouts. The Mendocino Woodlands is in just a phenomenally beautiful valley with lots of old growth still there. And the Woodlands is a state park. When it was created, it was being run by the state forest system, and it was 5,500 acres. In the 70s, even though it was being used every year by all kinds of camps, campouts, educational camps, music and dance camps, and they were sick of it. And they saw it as a lot of money to be made, and they wanted to bulldoze all these historic buildings. It's a National Historic Landmark, and log the entire valley. And there was a lot of uproar about it. And in 1976, there was a state assembly bill that gave about 90% of it to CAL FIRE to become part of Jackson and the other to state parks. And now it's a state park, but it's run by an independent association, the Mendocino Woodlands Camp Association. The area that was given to CAL FIRE is all second growth forest. It's has not been logged for 100 years. And it was all being considered a special treatment area. And it's written into their plan that it's a special treatment area. But for some reason, they want to log it. And there are three timber harvest plans being proposed. One of them is the Little North Fork Big River, which is, it ends up, one corner of it is about 2,000 feet away from the campsites and the camp cabins at Camp 2 of the Woodlands. And this is causing a lot of uproar because it's a beautiful area. And environmentally, it's just a disaster. The slopes are so steep. To get this small amount of timber out of 1 square mile, they plan on building 3 new miles of roads, resuscitating a mile and a half of roads, and all of these are on slopes that are, many of these are up to 65% slopes. And the Big River is a salmonid-bearing watershed, so...
So one thing that may be lost in all of this is the importance of these mature second growth forests. So everybody can sing the glories of our ancient redwoods, right? You know, the 1,200-year-old trees, they're spectacular. They're amazing. They're a sight to behold. They're what makes the North Coast so special. Second growth, this mature second growth, is actually even more rare than old growth. So we think that we have about 5% of old growth redwoods still remaining that existed prior to European contact on the North Coast. Mature second growth is only 2% of the historic landscape. So it is a remarkably rare resource. And so a lot of people often talk about, you know, we need to grow the future old growth. This is that future old growth, and you can't grow future old growth if you cut that second growth. So it's imperative if we want to be able to have old growth of the future, to be able to preserve these ancient redwoods and create more of them, that we knock it off and start to recognize the importance of this second growth. Matt, I think I saw that perhaps you wanted to chime in.
Yeah, I was just going to add, you know, it's a really perverse incentive, not just for Cal Fire, but for private timber harvesters, because they know that the older the trees get, the more uproar there will be if they cut them down. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Cal Fire is thinking, oh, we have a bunch of 90 to 100-year-old trees here, and if we don't cut some of them soon, we're never going to be able to cut them, because every year they get closer to being true old growth. And so, you know, I've just been thinking a lot about, you know, longer term, how we rethink our forest practice rules and the Forest Practice Act in order to prevent these sort of perverse incentives for timber harvesters.
And we all also know that old growth redwoods are exceptional in their carbon sequestration and storage. They store more carbon than any other forest type on the planet. The second best forest type next to the superlative old growth is second growth redwoods. So, you know, we're talking about trees that are exceptionally good at putting on carbon and storing it in their dense, rot-resistant heartwood.
Yeah.
This
is actually really a good point, that in Big River, downriver in the state parks, there's a plot called the Fritz Wunder Plot, which is very well known in ecology circles. It's one of the longest studied single acres of second growth redwoods in the world. And I think it is the longest. And it's where they figured out that redwood puts on biomass and sequesters carbon more quickly than anything else in the world. But to play devil's advocate, one of the things that Cal Fire keeps saying and written into all the plans is that they believe that they are improving and developing late seral forest, late successional forest, by doing what they're doing. And their science says they are. And that's where we disagree, that their science is wrong, that you don't need to, that redwood forest can manage itself. It doesn't need us to go in and thin it. And a lot of people say, well, wait a minute, aren't they just thinning these? I mean, the entire Little North Fork plan is single tree selection, which means they're going in, they plan to go in and take out 30% of the basal area. So if you cut all the trees and you measured how many square inches would all the stumps be, they're going to take out 30% of that. The problem, two problems is that we are very focused on trees, and I certainly was. And the more I've learned, that it's not just the redwoods that sequester the carbon, it's the soil. It's the organisms in the soil, and it's the understory. And when they go around, you know, single tree selection is actually pretty damaging. When, like I said, they're going to have 4.5 miles of roads in a 1 square mile area. They're going to drive tractors around all over and then cable yard and drag things across the forest floor to pull trees out. And 3/4 of the trees they pull out will be the larger trees, because these plans have to be worth enough money that a licensed timber operator will bid on them. So they're not going to just, they say, we're just thinning it and leaving more room for the older, bigger trees. But if they were doing that, nobody would bid on the THP. It's just not worth anything. And when they drive around and compact the soil, it really destroys the soil structure, which destroys the mycelium. And as you know, we're finding out more and more that forests are like one big organism. that they're a living, breathing organism, and the mycelium and the understory is pretty much as important as the great redwoods and the other trees. And the other thing that they're doing that's really frightening is they're trying, if you go around Jackson, you can pretty much see they're trying to create a monoculture redwood plantation because they are felling Douglas fir, and they say that it is all defective, but you can't sell Douglas fir here. It's just not worth anything. And these, they look at it and say, well, we left it out there on the log decks, these big logs, and I've gone out and counted rings and seen many 100-year-old trees or many 60 to 100-year-old trees that are lying there for years rotting. And they say, well, we leave them so that people can come out and make firewood. But nobody wants to drive out there to make firewood out of Douglas fir. But those trees are essential to a recovering ecosystem and to, you know, this diverse forest. So they have this belief that if they just cut all these Doug fir and other trees out, one timber harvest plant I looked at out on the Noyo River, there were enormous madrones that had been dropped and just lying on the ground to rot. And these are beautiful trees. And it's just part of a style of logging that if this is what they're demonstrating, then, you know, your question earlier about, do we need a demonstration forest? No, we do need to demonstrate something, climate change mitigation and carbon sequestration and education and you know, unified ecosystem restoration.
Yeah, let's talk about revising the idea of a demonstration state forest. So Chad, I know that you've put a lot of thought into what should become of this section of JDSF, Jackson Demonstration State Forest. What would you like to see them demonstrate and how?
Well, to put it very quickly, I would like to see the whole 48,000 acres, but I really am focusing on the western 15,000 acres because of political considerations right now, that they would continue demonstrating carbon sequestration and climate change mitigation and non-motorized recreation. And, you know, this is a forest that's close to a lot of population, and a lot of people want to be here. And we've noticed since COVID that there's at least twice as many people driving up from the city to use the forest. People come up all the time. And it used to be I'd ride my bike 30 miles and see nobody. And that's very rare these days. And many of the people I see have come from, you know, Marin and Santa Rosa and San Francisco, and they're camping and they're staying and B&Bs, and they're bringing a lot of money into the area. And this is, you know, for our area to be economically viable, we need to maintain a base for the tourism. But as far as the forest, we need to treat it as a unified ecosystem. And we need to consider that if we're not going to easily be able to change it from state forest property to some other kind of property. So we should just stick with the demonstration idea, but stop them from logging.
We just need to update what they're trying to demonstrate. I really like your point about the importance of recreation in the local economy and how that is becoming a larger part, because this mirrors what we see nationally. So at one point, timber production was the largest economic driver from our U.S. Forest Service lands. That's changed. So recreation is now the largest economic contributor that comes from our Forest Service lands. More money is being spent on, you know, the ultralight stoves and the restaurants in the nearby towns. This is a new model for these rural, formerly timber dependent communities. They're now rural recreation dependent communities. Larry.
Yeah, well, I've been dealing with Jackson State Forest now for about 40 years. And one thing that my groups have always stressed is it's time to take the profit out of it. If it's really going to be a scientific demonstration forest, then take the capitalist incentive out of cutting trees and do it for science if you're doing it, but don't do it for profit.
100%. Larry, where do you live?
Well, I'm two places. I'm on the coast outside of Eureka and then up on South Fork Mountain in Southern Trinity County.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we've been engaging with Jackson State Forest SAFE, my group in Trinity County has, for a long time, because they used to use Jackson State Forest as an excuse for justifying herbicide spraying.
Yeah.
And that, so that's how we got engaged with Jackson State back in the early 80s even. So I am familiar with it. I also love the Pygmy Forest. And so I like to visit your area periodically to go check the Pygmy Forest out.
And thank you all for listening to the EcoNews Report. Join us here on This Time and Channel next week for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.